An endurable peace is possible. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. That from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo as Afghanistan's warring factions talk peace in Qatar.
Afghans have at long last chosen to sit together and chart a new course for your country. This is a moment that we must dare to hope.
Negotiations between the Afghan government and the Taliban are expected to tackle several issues, including the terms of a permanent ceasefire and the disarming of tens of thousands of Taliban fighters. A lasting peace would provide an exit for U.S. and NATO troops. Another peace deal between an Arab nation and Israel, President Trump announcing an agreement between the Jewish state and Bahrain.
I am very hopeful that there will be more to follow. I can tell you there's tremendous enthusiasm on behalf of other countries to also join.
Last month, a peace accord between Israel and the United Arab Emirates was brokered. Iran calls the deal between Israel and Bahrain shameful. As wildfires ravage the West, firefighters in Oregon are trying to prevent a pair of infernos from merging not far from Portland. This as officials prepare for a, quote, mass fatality incident.
Firefighters continue to work around the clock to save lives and property from destruction. Well over a million acres of land has burned, which is over 1,500 square miles.
Governor Kate Brown, in Northern California, firefighters are having a hard time reaching devastated communities. At least 26 people are confirmed dead in California, Oregon, and Washington State. Another storm could take aim at the U.S. Gulf Coast. A tropical depression that's expected to cross South Florida today could reach near hurricane strength by next week. America's listening to Fox News.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Download and listen to Tyrus and Tim.
I really believe Kamala Harris was the best choice for our show. I was kind of hoping for Kat that somebody else got in.
I'm like, I can't do that impersonation.
You probably could, but we're now back in 1950 to where if you did that, you're a racist person and you need to be fired because you can't be an actor and portray a character unless they are white.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Did you hear the news? Now you can, with instant updates from Fox News for Amazon Alexa, breaking stories and top headlines, daily coronavirus developments, the economy, and so much more. Brought to you by Fox News, America's number one cable news network. Plus, setup couldn't be easier, because everything's ready to go in the app. Just say,
Alexa, play news from Fox.
In Fox News.
It's the latest, when you need it, on demand, from Fox News and Amazon Alexa.
Lawyers for some of the victims of the 9/11 terror attacks call a ruling by a federal judge a turning point. Two members of Saudi Arabia's royal family are among those who will have to answer questions about the planning of the attacks. The anticipated depositions would be the result of a long-running lawsuit seeking billions of dollars in damages. An attorney for the kingdom has declined to comment. It's been 19 years since the attacks, and the anniversary was marked yesterday by somber ceremonies in New York, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and at the Pentagon.
184 people were killed at the Pentagon and on the hijacked airliner. At least five children were aboard Flight 77, many flying for the first time. The youngest victim, 3-year-old Dana Falkenberg. She would be 22 years old today. Dana's 8-year-old sister was sitting next to her.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. Not much optimism on Capitol Hill when it comes to a Phase 4 coronavirus stimulus package.
The atmosphere has gotten a good deal more partisan since March and April. We're that much closer to the election.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, the two sides at a standstill after a scaled-down rescue package was foiled by Senate Democrats on Thursday. They say the GOP's $650 billion proposal falls far short of what's needed. Growing evidence that kids can spread the virus.
A new study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicates kids who contract COVID-19 at daycare centers and day camps can carry the virus home, spreading it to family. Harvard University researcher William Hannig says it doesn't mean child care programs and schools should close, but parents and families, as well as those working at those facilities, should take precautions to limit possible exposure.
Fox's Rich Dennison, the CDC recommends social distancing, the wearing of masks, and the use of disinfectant. I'm Pam Puso, and this is Fox News.
Virginia and Stafford County, still problems with a vehicle fire on 95 southbound, just north of the exit 143 for 610 in Garrisonville. The right lane, the center lane, and the right shoulder and the entrance ramp are closed. Expect about a 2-mile delay as a result of this vehicle fire. This has been out there for quite some time. No other issues reported right now on 95 in Virginia. Do keep in mind that a portion of Beach Drive remains closed for flooding conditions between Garrett Park Road and the Maryland DC line. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. We'll see some afternoon sunshine. Temperatures today a little bit cooler with an easterly flow, highs reaching the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows into the upper 50s in the suburbs, mid-60s around town. Here's Sunday, partly cloudy, stray afternoon showers well to the west. Highs tomorrow in the lower 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Start your day with a daily brief on the hottest political issues from former Secret Service agent, former NYPD officer, and New York Times bestselling author Dan Bongino.
Listen to me. People are being killed, kids, literally, because the Democrats are selling you a myth that Trump is destroying the post office that's destroyed itself and that the cops are your real problem? Because you fell for a hoax! You're an idiot if you fell for this!
Just add the Bongino brief to your flash briefing on Amazon Alexa.
Football is back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the center of this weekend's action with over $8 million up for grabs across all their contests. Get in on the action now. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, pass, and catch means more with a DraftKings lineup. It's simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. DraftKings has paid out billions of dollars to winners since 2012, so they know a thing or two about cold hard cash. Download the DraftKings app now and use code DCWINS. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit and compete for over $8 million in prizes across all contests. Don't miss this extra special week one bonus. That's code DCWINS only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Based on the recent stock market slide, do you feel your money and investments are safe? Would a repeat of the market losses you experienced earlier in the year or in 2002 and 2008 derail your family's retirement plans? It's time to make a U-turn on your retirement strategy. This Sunday at 1 p.m., tune in to the U-Turn Equity Financial Hour with Tucker and Blake. They'll cover these financial topics and, more importantly, share little-known strategies to keep your money safe and discuss tax-free income. Join the conversation this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Sometimes in business, the unexpected comes calling. But even in, I'm going to say it, unprecedented times, don't bounce back. Bounce forward with Comcast Business. Bounce forward fast with internet speeds up to a gig, with the flexibility to update your bandwidth in just a few clicks, and with security solutions that help keep your connected devices protected. Be fast, be flexible, be ready for what's next, and bounce forward. Help your business to bounce forward with this amazing offer. Get a powerful and reliable internet solution from Comcast Business. Starting at $69.99 a month for 24 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, for a limited time, ask how to get a $500 prepaid card. Call or go online today to find out more. Offer ends 9/27/2020. Restrictions apply. Limited to new Comcast Business 100 megabits per second internet customers. Early termination fee applies. After 24 months, monthly service charge increases to $99.99 a month. May not be combined with other offers. Actual speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Equipment installation, taxes, and fees extra, subject to change.
Hi, this is Simon Hamilton, co-host of the Wise Investor Show on WMAL. The CARES Act was recently established to support individuals and business owners during these challenging times. From small business loans to tax considerations, there are a variety of ways it can help. We're here to help you navigate these changes and help you understand what the CARES Act could mean for your financial plan. Visit thewiseinvestorgroup.com to speak with one of our advisors today.
Call 866-758-9473 or log on to thewiseinvestorgroup.com and resolve to become a better informed wise investor.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, our producer this morning, and obviously a lot to cover today. And first off, very happy to have Cheryl Atkinson back with us. Of course, she's been out on hiatus for the summer, as she traditionally does. She's out in the field producing segments for the different weekly editions of Full Measure, so she will be back with us a bit later on this morning. She's just been down at the southern border, so we're going to get a sense of what's been going on there over the past 3.5 years, kind of the differences on the southern border and illegal immigration from when the president first took office to where we stand now. She'll also have a look at the violence in Minneapolis. So we'll be talking with Cheryl coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Some developments in the George Floyd case yesterday. The four Minneapolis police officers involved in the death of George Floyd made an in-court appearance. We'll get an analysis coming up from Jim Trusty this morning. We'll also talk with Jim about the members of the Mueller team wiping their cell phones clean. That's a very interesting story and a lot of different angles on that. We're going to check in with KT McFarland and Tony Schaefer on that as well. So looking forward to those discussions this morning. Jennifer Harper will join us. Some interesting new poll numbers on how people are feeling about COVID, about their summers, and about the elections. And we've got Jennifer Harper coming up in this hour. So those are just some of the things that we're going to be touching on this morning. Obviously, one of the big stories of the week, the Bob Woodward book, Rage, coming out. President Trump spending hours and hours, totaling 18 hours, in conversations with Bob Woodward. And a lot of discussion about, did the president underplay COVID-19? Did he play it down or not? And I'm sure you've seen and heard a lot of this debate in the news this week. And I've just got a couple of clips to try and put it in a perspective, and you'll draw your own perspectives from what you've seen and heard in the news throughout the week. But one of the things that's important to note is, panic. And I think we all remember how we felt initially. We all raced out to the grocery stores and stocked up on everything. And that's when the president was supposedly playing it down. And here's how the president explained it.
Outwardly, I said, it's a very serious problem. And it's always a serious problem. That doesn't mean I'm going to jump up and down in the air and start saying, people are going to die, people are going to die. No, no, I'm not going to do that.
And, of course, a lot of criticism of the president, obviously coming from the Democrats in an election year. But here's what Dr. Fauci had to say about it on Wednesday.
Obviously, when we would be speaking to the president, we talk about the cold facts. He would get them. You know, often he would want to, you know, make sure that the country doesn't get down and out about things. But I don't recall anything that was any gross distortion in things that I spoke to him about.
Okay, so one of the big questions that arose from this, and questions for Bob Woodward, is why didn't he say anything about what the president had told him? He sat on this for all this time, and a book coming out, why didn't he come out with it sooner, or was he waiting so that he could sell books in the run-up to the election? Well, what did the former Washington Bureau chief of BuzzFeed have to say about it? His name is John Stanton. He said, quote, there is no ethical or moral defense of Bob Woodward's decision to not publish these tapes as soon as they were made. If there was any chance it could have saved a single life, he was obligated to do so. Bob Woodward put making money over his moral and professional duty. Those are the words of John Stanton, and that's just some of the blowback he got. Former reporter for the Washington Post, Jose Antonio Vargas, said, quote, if journalism is a public trust, a trust that has consistently eroded, and Bob Woodward is an associate editor at the Washington Post, why did Woodward sit on this information while Americans suffered and died? From a former Washington Post reporter. Well, what did President Trump have to say about it?
If he thought that was a bad statement, he would have reported it because he thinks that, you know, you don't want to have anybody that is going to suffer medically because of some fact.
So that's what the president said, and that's just a short sort of summary of the controversy that has arisen from the Bob Woodward book and those conversations with President Trump. And we'll see how John Gizzi feels about that. We're going to talk with John about it. What's the shelf life of the story? How big of an impact might it have on the upcoming presidential election? Well, we will be getting into that with John Gizzi this morning. And a big story also this week is the DHS whistleblower, and we're going to get to that next. But first, a check of the traffic and weather. And Michelle Murray is back in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
Problems continue in Virginia and Garrisonville on 95 southbound at 610 exit 143 with the vehicle fire. Only the single lane, left lane is getting through this incident, and also the entrance ramp is closed, so you will want to avoid this area for the time being. Now, on the Beltway, on the inner loop of the Beltway right near Braddock Road, there is a disabled tractor trailer affecting the right shoulder of the access lane. That is blocked at this time. So far, that is not causing any delays. Do keep in mind there is a work zone on the outer loop of the Beltway along the left side at Landover Road, so far not causing delays. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WML Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. We'll see some afternoon sunshine. Temperatures today a little bit cooler with an easterly flow, highs reaching the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows into the upper 50s in the suburbs, mid-60s around town. Here's Sunday, partly cloudy, stray afternoon showers well to the west. Highs tomorrow in the lower 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees, 616 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
This is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this morning. And as we continue on some of the top news stories of the week, a senior Department of Homeland Security official alleging in a whistleblower complaint that he was told to stop providing intelligence reports on the threat of Russian interference in the 2020 election. That in part because it, quote, made the president look bad, an instruction he believed would jeopardize national security. The official is Brian Murphy. Until recently, he was in charge of the intelligence and analysis at DHS. He said in that whistleblower complaint that on two occasions he was told to stand down on reporting about the Russian threat and alleged that senior officials told him to modify other intelligence reports. Well, Chad Wolf, acting Secretary of Homeland Security, spoke with Brett Baer last night on Fox News, and here's what Chad Wolf had to say about it.
That complaint is completely false. It's a fabrication. We have been very clear regarding Russia interference in our elections, Russia interference at any point. We've produced over 27 different reports over the last 12 months, I believe three alone in the month of August. We've provided over 40 different briefings, in-person briefings to members of Congress and elsewhere about Russian interference in our elections. I've talked about it. I've talked about it on media appearances such as this. I've talked about it in congressional testimony, and I talked about it even this week in my State of the Homeland Security address. So we've been very clear about making sure that we call out Russia, and the administration has been very clear on this. So I have no idea what he's talking about. That is not the case. It's not any direction I have ever given. We've been very clear. And again, we put out a report regarding Russia interference, I believe, about 3 days ago. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Interesting to note that Brian Murphy's legal representation is the same attorney who represented Alexander Vindman, another whistleblower. Huh. Here's another story that's making news, and a significant one for the president. Israel and the Gulf state of Bahrain have reached a landmark deal to fully normalize their relations, the president making that announcement yesterday. The second Arab country to make peace with Israel in 30 days, the tweet from President Trump. Now, I want to read just a little bit here from a BBC story. This is not a Fox News story. It's not a CNN, but it's coming from the British Broadcasting Corporation. For decades, most Arab states have boycotted Israel, insisting they would only establish ties after the Palestinian dispute was settled. But last month, the United Arab Emirates agreed to normalize its relationship with Israel. There had been much speculation that Bahrain might follow suit. Mr. Trump, who presented his Middle East peace plan in January, aimed at resolving the Israel-Palestinian conflict, helped broker both accords. Here's how the... Oh, one more note from the BBC. Bahrain is only the fourth Arab country in the Middle East after the UAE, Egypt, and Jordan to recognize Israel since its founding in 1948. Here's how the president summarized it.
There had been two peace agreements with Israel in the last 72 years. This is now the second peace agreement that we've announced in the last month. And I am very hopeful that there will be more to follow. I can tell you there's tremendous enthusiasm on behalf of other countries to also join. Both leaders also agreed that Bahrain will fully normalize its diplomatic relations with Israel. They will exchange embassies and ambassadors, begin direct flights between their countries, and launch cooperation initiatives across a broad range of sectors. I am very hopeful that there will be more to follow. I can tell you there's tremendous enthusiasm on behalf of other countries to also join.
So that's the president speaking about the Bahrain peace deal with Israel. Now, the president has been nominated twice, two nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize, one for the Serbia-Kosovo deal and one for what he's doing on Mideast peace. But The Atlantic, now we all know Jeffrey Goldberg at The Atlantic, he's the guy that published the story about the anonymous sources and what the president supposedly said about our World War I veterans. The Atlantic calls to, quote, end the Nobel Peace Prize following Trump nominations. Hello, The Atlantic magazine raising eyebrows on Friday when it published a piece calling for the abolition of the Nobel Peace Prize after President Trump was nominated for the prestigious honor. They need to send therapists into The Atlantic. I mean, these people need help. I mean, this is pathetic. And not only The Atlantic. Now, you would think that a congressional leader might be, you know, somewhat positive about a U.S. president being nominated for two different Nobel Peace Prizes. You might think that leadership, even on the other party, might have a positive response to that. Well, here's how Nancy Pelosi feels about it.
Good for him for having a distraction on a day when the numbers of people who are affected and the numbers of people who are dying from this virus only increases.
So, warm words from Speaker Pelosi. What can I say? 6:23, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton, and sometimes when I'm out and about, people will say, is it really true that you loved your Goodfeet Arch Support so much that you bought the store? Of course it is, I say. And I never dreamed that I would run marathons and continue to stay active without my feet getting in the way. When I bought the store in 2014, I would have never imagined that tens of thousands of customers would find relief from foot, knee, and back pain. The support of these loyal customers has allowed us to open new stores throughout Virginia, Maryland, and now North Carolina. I love to hear their stories of walking, running, and just enjoying their new life pain-free. Don't let foot, knee, or back pain keep you from living the life you love. Come into the Goodfeet store for your free fitting and test walk, and get your own Goodfeet story. To find the store nearest you, go to goodfeet.com. The Goodfeet store is located in Fairfax, Leesburg, and Rockville, Maryland.
Sometimes you don't realize how much something was bothering you
until it's gone.
And then you breathe a big sigh of relief. That's exactly how you're going to feel
after we work our magic at your house.
1-800-GOT-JUNK makes you feel happier in your home.
Cleaner.
Stronger.
And more relaxed.
Like you just stepped out of a hot shower.
And are ready for anything.
Make your home a happy home.
By calling 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
We make junk disappear.
All you have to do is point.
You can't imagine how much better you're going to feel when all that junk is gone.
You don't have to lift a finger.
That's not true.
What?
They need to lift their pointing finger.
We make junk disappear.
All you have to do is point.
Make your home a happy home.
And it will make you happy too.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Football is back. Wow, we saw kind of a bizarre baseball season come back. Now football's back. And we'll see how that one plays out, so to speak. And the Philadelphia Eagles coming to Washington. We will have coverage of the Washington football team taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. Our coverage begins at high noon tomorrow right here on WMAL. So looking forward to seeing the Washington football team out on the field once again. Yesterday, a somber commemoration of the 19th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and both President Trump and Joe Biden were in Shanksville, Pennsylvania at the memorial for Flight 93. They were not there at the same time, the president there earlier in the morning, and Joe Biden came in a little bit after the president was there. And I want to just play a couple of clips from what President Trump had to say at the Shanksville Memorial yesterday, because it's something that we only talk about it once a year, which is, I think, sad and troubling, but that's sort of the nature of the beast when it comes to today's society and immediate gratification and the 24-hour news cycles. So once a year, we take one day to look back on 9/11, those who gave their lives in service, the first responders, those people, the victims in the towers and at the Pentagon and on Flight 93. So I just wanted to take a moment and share some of the words of President Trump yesterday.
19 years ago on this day, at this very hour on this field, 40 brave men and women triumphed over terror and gave their lives in defense of our nation. Their names and their stories are forever inscribed on the eternal roll call of American heroes. Today we pay tribute to their sacrifice and we mourn deeply for the nearly 3,000 precious and beautiful souls who were taken from us on September 11th, 2001. The First Lady and I come to this hallowed ground deeply aware that we cannot fill the void in your heart or erase the terrible sorrow of this day. The agony renewed, the nightmare relived, the wounds reopened, the last treasured words played over and over again in your minds. But while we cannot erase your pain, we can help to shoulder your burden. We promise that unwavering love that you so want and need, support, devotion, and the very special devotion of all Americans.
President Trump speaking yesterday at the Shanksville, Pennsylvania Memorial to Flight 93. It's 6:28. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Hello, class. Welcome to Zentertainment with Amy. I'm Amy. Today, let's center your mind, body, and all your entertainment options with Xfinity X1. Repeat after me. What should I watch? Good. Very zen. X1 gives you access to everything in one place. Live TV, and now the new streaming app, Peacock. So just breathe and trust in the voice remote. Show me Parks and Rec on Peacock.
I have a medical condition, all right. It's called caring too much, and it's incurable!
Soothing, right?
X1 just got even better, with Peacock Premium included. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. Get started with Xfinity Internet and TV for $54.99 a month for 12 months with no term contract required. Plus, get an upgrade for double the download speed free for a year. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing and autopay, ends 12/2020. Restrictions apply. New Choice Double Play customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees, including BTV fee extra and subject to change. After promo, regular rates apply. Peacock membership required. Actual speeds vary and not guaranteed.
Based on the recent stock market slide, do you feel your money and investments are safe? Would a repeat of the market losses you experienced earlier in the year or in 2002 and 2008 derail your family's retirement plans? It's time to make a U-turn on your retirement strategy. This Sunday at 1 p.m., tune in to the U-Turn Equity Financial Hour with Tucker and Blake. They'll cover these financial topics and, more importantly, share little-known strategies to keep your money safe and discuss tax-free income. Join the conversation this Sunday at 1 p.m.
And taking a look at some of the other news stories this morning, the wildfires are still raging in the West. From Southern California to Washington State, over 100 different wildfires, 26 confirmed fatalities so far. Many more are unaccounted for. In Oregon, firefighters aided by helicopters dropping fire retardant and water battling two large wildfires, and they threatened to merge near the most populated part of Oregon. The governor there telling a news conference yesterday that dozens of people are missing in Jackson County. There is some hope, though, in Oregon because a change in the weather with winds dropping and shifting direction and humidity rising is now greatly helping firefighters. A tropical depression is forecast to reach near hurricane intensity early next week. It's formed off South Florida. The U.S. Hurricane Center says the tropical depression, it's number 19. It formed on Friday. It's centered about 50 miles east-southeast of Miami with top sustained winds right now of 35 miles an hour. Forecasters say the system could become a tropical storm before it moves inland over South Florida. It's expected to reach tropical storm status by Sunday, could approach near hurricane strength in coming days as it heads into the Gulf of Mexico. People from the Florida Panhandle to southeastern Louisiana are urged to keep watch on the storm. Time now for a check of the traffic and weather. Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Problems continue in Virginia on 95 southbound at 610 Garrisonville Aquia. That is exit 143. The vehicle fire is still there. Only the single left lane is squeezing by, and the entrance ramp also closed. On-ramp is partially blocked as well. Traffic is getting to be very slow through that area. Now, on the outer loop of the Beltway at Landover Road, there is some construction along the two left lanes. So far, that is not causing any delays at this time. And on 66 inside the Beltway, westbound at Fairfax Drive, look for construction along the right side. Now from GarageJoyRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. We'll see some afternoon sunshine. Temperatures today a little bit cooler with an easterly flow. Highs reaching the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Lows into the upper 50s in the suburbs. Mid-60s around town. Here Sunday, partly cloudy. Stray afternoon showers well to the west. Highs tomorrow in the lower 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees at 6:32 on the Saturday morning update.
Football is back, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the center of this weekend's action with over $8 million up for grabs across all of their contests. Get in on the action now. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, pass, and catch means more with a DraftKings lineup. It's simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. DraftKings has paid out billions of dollars to winners since 2012, so they know a thing or two about cold hard cash. Download the DraftKings app now and use code DCWINS. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize with your first deposit and compete for over $8 million in prizes across all contests. Don't miss this extra special week one bonus. That's code DCWINS only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are very happy to be joined each week by Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Less than 2 months before the elections, and the media always talking about the chaos in the Republican Party. What are you seeing in terms of mayhem?
Well, let's talk about mayhem in one party. This is a very interesting commentary by a very, very astute observer, and his name is Edward J. Erler. Let me tell you about him. He is a political scientist and a constitutional scholar. He Rights for the American Mind. This is a publication of the Claremont Institute, where Mr. Erler is on the board of directors and is a senior fellow. He's also a professor of political science emeritus at California State University and a former distinguished professor at Hillsdale College. So that is your source for this particular quote. And Mr. Erler has declared that the Democratic Party is now the riot party. Put that in your lexicon, the riot party. And this is a guy who has traced the role of riots in politics and society among his many research projects, and, you know, all the way going back like 25 years. And he has declared the Democratic Party is now the riot party. And this is what he has to say. The left has perfected the mob veto. He says, America's present crisis is driven in large part by the left's rejection of the rule of law. Those in charge of the riots are not merely blackmailing their fellow citizens on particular issues, like defunding the police. Rather, they seek to overthrow the electoral process itself. Riots are not only being justified, they're being made into a staple of our judicial system and our public life. The threat of them used to install routine fear in our homes and our city. And he goes on and says, riots are fast on their way to becoming elections by other means. If leftists have their way, they will decide all electoral questions from here on now will be by mob rule. Many of them have been aiming at this target since the 1990s and probably before. It all makes sense now. Again, that's coming from Edward J. Erler, and this is currently online at the American Mind. If you want to read the whole thing, because it's quite the study, very erudite, but interesting.
You know, it's funny when you look at the themes of the campaigns. We all remember Make America Great Again in 2016, and that's, you know, being carried on this year in a lot of the Trump rallies. Democrats had hope and change back in the Obama years, and now it's Build Back Better.
They certainly appear not to have forgotten the old hope and change days. And there's a new poll out there that's suggesting that the Democrats are still particularly stuck on the change part. And this is coming from our friends over at the Pew Research Center. In 2018, the Pew Research Center found that 68% of Democrats said that they felt substantial and significant change in the fundamental design and structure of the U.S. government was now necessary. And about a third, 31%, said that no changes were needed. Well, they have repeated that poll, and here's what's happened. Now, 79% of Democrats say that changes are needed to make our government work for current times, and only 20% say that no changes are needed. So they're kind of still stuck in the change idea that somehow this is the panacea for all of our politics. But, of course, there's an inevitable partisan divide in this poll, Rick. And here's what the Pew Research Center has to say. Republicans and Democrats have moved in opposing directions. In 2018, half of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents said that significant changes to American government were needed. Today, that share has dropped to 41%, and a majority, 57%, now say that no significant changes are needed in the government. And this is a big fat poll, Rick. This is 11,000 people were in this poll that was conducted through August the 2nd and released on September 2nd. So Democrats, they still love the change, and Republicans are going, nah, I don't think so.
Well, just about every other day now, there's a book coming out on President Trump. Now we've got a movie on the way.
Well, yeah, you're going to have a lot of movies on the way, but one is really being rushed along. It's actually a mini-series that's going to be appearing on Showtime later this month, of course, just in time for the election, and it's called The Comey Rule. This is based on the book that James Comey wrote, former FBI Director James Comey, called A Higher Loyalty. And there's a lot of buzz going on. Of course, the timing, of course, has been carefully calibrated to intersect with the election. But
yeah, Comey's always been good at timing now with elections, hasn't he?
Well, you know, Rick, there is a movie coming out, or that's in the making, that is not an anti-Trump movie. How about that? And this is coming from a pair of independent documentary filmmakers. You may know of them. This is Ellen McAleer and Anne McElhenney. They are the filmmakers behind these independent projects about Gosnell, Frack Nation, the FBI Lovebirds. These are independent films that have done actually pretty well at the box office. Well, guess what? They are now raising funds and putting their pen down to get the script rolling on a project called Obamagate, the movie. And this is intended as a new and very accurate take on all the deep state push to damage the reputation and the standing of President Trump last year. Everybody remembers all that. The filmmakers are saying that Obamagate, the movie, is going to be 100% verbatim, meaning that a lot of their dialogue and so forth is going to be based on what people actually said during all of those very months. And they say where Hollywood relies on fiction, our film will only be composed of the real words of those deep state operatives. That's what they have to say. Actors Dean Cain and Christy Swanson and John James have all signed on to do the major roles in this film. If you're curious, it's ObamagateTheMovie.com, and they are starting a GoFundMe thing, I think. And meanwhile, another book we'll mention this morning, and this is from Senator Marsha Blackburn, and the title of the book, for all you ladies out there, is The Mind of a Conservative Woman, Seeking the Best for Family and Country. This has just come out, and she's citing all the media-driven culture that's been biased against conservative women. Gee, have you noticed that? And only friendly to their liberal counterparts. And Senator Blackburn, she says, the left can't believe that a female could actually choose not to be a member of a national organization for women, that they might be pro-life, or that they might stand for conservative and constitutional values. They can't believe that you don't need the federal government to lead you through life. The media and the D.C. establishment are stunned that conservative women even exist. And very, very strong words there, and smart words, too. And, again, this is coming from Senator Marsha Blackburn, The Mind of a Conservative Woman. It's got a nice foreword by Newt Gingrich and comments from Casey James. She's the president of the Heritage Foundation. She says, a new era is upon us, the era of conservative women everywhere. So that's a book to take a peek at, perhaps.
Good for her. So as we look back on our summer, at least I look back on the summer and say, what happened here? Apparently, you've got some poll numbers that might make me feel better and might make anybody listening feel better who also feels they had a blast summer.
Oh, yes, indeed. I think I had a summer. I think I, like, went to New Hampshire for about 20 minutes and looked at the flowers. I don't remember the summer, but if you feel that way, because we've been preoccupied with so many things, I've got a nice Economist YouGov poll here for you that describes how Americans felt about their summer. And here we go with the numbers. 38% say it was an average summer. That included 38% of Republicans. 37% of Democrats agree with that. 30% overall said it was a bad summer. 29% of Republicans, 28% of Independents, 31% of Democrats agree. 16% overall said it was the worst summer ever. And that includes 11% of Republicans and 21% of Democrats agree with that. 14% overall said the summer was a good summer. That includes 20% of Republicans. I was looking on the bright side, 16% of Independents and 9% of Democrats. And last but not least, 2% overall described the past summer as the best summer ever. And that includes 2% of Republicans, 1% of Independents, and 3% of Democrats. So if you had a meh kind of summer, you're not alone.
Well, you know, there are some people who probably had a really good summer and a really good year. And you've got some numbers on the richest people in America.
Oh, boy, do I ever. This is coming from Forbes. Oh, it was an interesting read over there at Forbes.com. But every year they come out with the top 400. They name the top 400 people with the most money in the United States, and to even be considered, you have to have at least $2.5 billion to qualify to get on this particular roster, the platinum-plated roster here of the richest folks in America. And here's what Forbes has to say. Pandemic be damned. America's 400 richest are worth a record $3.2 trillion. That's up $240 billion from only a year ago, aided by a good stock market that has defied the coronavirus. That's according, again, to the Forbes 400. If you're curious about this, it's a great little read at Forbes.com. All 400 are on there, and we'll only mention a couple here. And, of course, Jeff Bezos is at the very top. He's worth $179 billion. He's been number one for 3 years in a row. And his wealth, Forbes tells us, has increased 57% in the last year. Bill Gates is in second place, $111 billion. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg is in third with $85 billion. Warren Buffett's next, $73.5 billion. And Larry Ellison, he's the old software guru, $72.5 billion. That's the top five. And let's take a peek at some of the youngest ones. The youngest person on the big billionaire list is 30-year-old Snapchat founder Evan Spiegel. 30 years old, and he's worth $11 billion. There were 56 million women on this list, Rick, but only 11 of them are, quote, self-made. That's kind of a delicate description there from Forbes. And at the top of the list is Alice Walton with $62.5 billion, and followed by Mackenzie Scott. Now, who is Mackenzie Scott? She is the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos, and she's worth $57 billion. And if you're wondering where President Trump, well, he's on the list, and he is currently ranked 339th on the list with a net worth of $2.5 billion. And that's your money report for this morning.
You know, the only thing in there that makes me feel good is that Jeff Bezos' ex-wife actually took $57 billion away from him. So that's a good thing.
Well, you're probably not alone with that sentiment, Rick.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Rick. Have a good day, everybody.
And it is 6:46. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We have got Jim Trusty coming up next. But first, let's head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
A couple of incidents to be aware of in Virginia. In Loudoun County on westbound 50, right in the area of Hutchinson Farm Road, all westbound lanes are closed due to a serious accident. And the problem in Garrisonville continues on 95 southbound at 610 Garrisonville Aquia, exit 143 with the vehicle fire. Only the single left lane squeezing by and the entrance ramp also closed. Looks like delays are building in the area. Also, keep in mind that there is a work zone on the outer loop at Landover Road on the left side of the roadway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. We'll see some afternoon sunshine. Temperatures today a little bit cooler with an easterly flow. Highs reaching the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Lows into the upper 50s in the suburbs. Mid-60s around town. Here's Sunday, partly cloudy. Stray afternoon showers well to the west. Highs tomorrow in the lower 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
70 degrees, 6:47 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We have some fascinating stories on the legal front this week, and who better than to tackle them for us? Jim Trusty. He's a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Quoting a FoxNews.com story, newly released records from the Department of Justice show that the cell phones of multiple people on then-Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigative team were wiped for various reasons during the probe. At least several dozen phones wiped of information because of forgotten passcodes, irreparable screen damage, loss of the device, intentional deletion, or other reasons. This came before the Department of Justice's Office of Inspector General could review the devices. What do you make of this, Jim?
Well, there does seem to be a little mass password amnesia at DOJ when it came to the Mueller team. And it's really, to me, pretty interesting, pretty frustrating stuff. I mean, it took Judicial Watch 2 years to wrestle these materials out of DOJ to let them know about these telephones. And, of course, it was the inspector general that was kind of leaning in to the Mueller team after it was wrapping up and saying, we want to get these devices back. We want to be able to take a look at it. And, of course, we already know that there were text messages between Lisa Page and Agent Strzok that were pretty devastating, pretty unbelievable things to be putting into text messages. So this was a pretty routine aspect of the inspector general. They want to look at these things. And you have probably somewhere between about 18 and 25 total attorneys on the Mueller team. I mean, the numbers were kind of in flux from time to time. But for 18 to 25 attorneys to have dozens of phones turned in that did not have any data on them is extraordinary. Even in my low-tech mind, I smell something there. And so when you look at these 87 pages that were turned over to Judicial Watch, it's really kind of intriguing to see what the different excuses are from time to time. And I'm sympathetic. I'll be the first to forget a password at some point. But the convenience of all of these people at the top of the Mueller team losing track of their passwords, wiping it clean. In one instance, somebody turned in a phone in airplane mode and said, yeah, I don't remember my password. So it forced OIG to wipe it clean. But again, there seemed to be a lot of coincidence here, including the deputy in charge of things, Andrew Weissman, entering his password too many times and, quote, having to wipe his phone. That happened at least twice with him and maybe a third time, if it's correctly. So this is a pretty astounding moment of opaqueness on behalf of these investigators, and one that I think a lot of us can draw some negative inferences from. You know, Andrew Weissman had made a living as a prosecutor doing fairly complex cases where I can tell you over and over again he would have been calling on jurors to draw inferences from circumstances, to basically say, look, you know, we can't crawl inside somebody's head to prove criminal intent, but look at all these circumstances. Well, look at the circumstances of him wiping his phone, getting a replacement, wiping that one clean 11 days later. And I wonder how many of these folks that were on the Mueller team have a history of forgetting passwords, or how much of it happened just during their tenure during the Mueller team. And I think that's the question that would really be interesting to know from DOJ is, you know, did all of them conveniently have the same amnesia around the time of the Inspector General's investigation, or were they just, you know, clumsy for a long period of work at DOJ where this happened all the time? I suspect it's the former, but we don't know from what we've seen so far.
Moving right along, Peter Strzok's book is out, and I just want to read one quote from Peter Strzok. This was on CBS this week doing an interview. Every day around the United States, government employees walk into their jobs and they leave their political opinions at the door. They do their jobs like I did my job, objectively, independently, and in pursuit of the truth. In pursuit of the truth, a guy who lied to his wife and had an affair with a married woman, not exactly the poster child for integrity. What's your assessment of these books coming out from people who have held some fairly high positions in law enforcement? Jim Comey is an example.
Well, my guess is that all of these things will do very well in the fiction section. You know, none of them are particularly credible. All of them are insanely narcissistic in their approach. And I guess what really bothers me is just, you know, the kind of the genetic makeup of these folks, these Comeys, McCabes, and Strzoks, compared to anybody else that I ran with in law enforcement. I mean, I was on the law enforcement side of the aisle for 27 years and still have some good relationships there with FBI agents and others. And it's just the culture is so different with Comey and company, because most of these agents could see unbelievable things, tell unbelievable stories that we'd all be interested in, but it just wasn't in their makeup. It wasn't in their DNA to go out and do a kiss-and-tell book. But that's all changed with Comey and Strzok and Page. All of these people are so full of themselves that they don't know to be embarrassed, and they'll go out and they'll publish books and they'll, you know, wrap themselves in the flag like that quote you read from Peter Strzok. But they're really doing a disservice to the actual objective and professional law enforcement people that are out there that kind of tote the line that I'm used to for many decades.
Jim's story out on Friday. Nora Danahy, a prosecutor working for U.S. Attorney John Durham on the probe of the Russia investigation, has resigned, according to a spokesman at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Connecticut. And immediately the speculation begins. A Hartford newspaper cited colleagues who told the newspaper that Danahy was stepping down in part due to concerns of political pressure to deliver a report before the presidential election. What do you make of this one, Jim?
Well, I think he used the right word in the beginning, which is speculation. I mean, to me, that story is really the definition of idle speculation. Durham had worked with her for for a long period of time, for many years. Both of them have a great reputation as being truly professional prosecutors, independent-minded prosecutors that just do their job. She had gone on to work, I think, in the defense industry, and basically Durham lured her back to DOJ to work on this investigation. Of course, this investigation went probably considerably longer than either of them would have expected just because of coronavirus. You know, you didn't have the ability to even impanel a grand jury for the better part of 6 months during the middle of their investigation. So it's, to me, what's interesting is she's not saying anything. She's not going out and, you know, announcing that she's protesting Barr or White House pressure. John Durham, true to form, isn't saying a thing about it. He lets his indictments do the talking. But there's people moved that are saying, well, maybe it's because the White House is pressuring John Durham to get this investigation done. Of course, by the way, the same article ends up saying if Joe Biden wins, he might shut the whole thing down. So if there's pressure they feel, it might be about doing the right thing and knowing that it could be just completely shut down. I don't see John Durham bending to Barr or to Trump or anybody else. I think he's doing what he's doing, and we'll find out when he's ready to tell us. So, again, to me, this, for the moment at least, is a total non-story. I don't see anything to support the speculation that, you know, there's some murky pressure going on behind the scenes that caused her to object.
On Friday, the four Minneapolis police officers involved in the death of George Floyd were in court in person. What are the headlines from the day in court?
Well, it's the first of the fireworks. I mean, this is going to be a heated case inside and outside the courthouse, and there'll be a lot of battles over a lot of things. But what brought them into court was actually some preliminary talking about things like jury selection and the ability to seat a jury when everyone knows something about the case. And again, think back, Rick, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this being dangerous territory, that Zarniyev on the Boston Marathon bomber's case, his death penalty got reversed because of the notion that an appellate court didn't like the way jury selection was conducted. So there'll be a lot of conversations between the parties and the judge about that. But the conversation kind of spun into a different direction, which was that the county attorney, the prosecutor in charge of the office, and a chunk of his senior leadership had gone and met with the medical examiner. And this is a huge issue. The medical examiner has talked about fentanyl overdose as being part of the equation. And there's some very murky language right now about causation, because obviously if a medical examiner committed to saying Mr. Floyd died from an overdose, that's also probably going to be lethal to any sort of murder prosecution against the officers. So in this case, the medical examiner's conclusions, their testimony, might be really important. So it doesn't surprise me that prosecutors wanted to talk to the ME, to the medical examiner, and find out what he's going to say about this case. What the judge said was essentially, you've made yourselves witnesses. We can't have prosecutors that are also witnesses. And you should have had an agent or some other witness there for the interview of the medical examiner, and you didn't, so I'm going to kick all of you off this case. I mean, it was a real lightning strike moment where the judge was tossing essentially the entire senior staff of that office off the case for violating this rule or this notion that they should have a witness there instead of themselves. Well, the problem is, as the county attorney is pointing out in some public releases, two of the prosecutors that went to the medical examiner's office are already off the case. So they're already available as witnesses should this ever come to be. And I think that's a pretty fatal blow to the judge's reaction. There's a motion to reconsider that's been filed by the prosecutors. I think it'll be granted, at least in part. But again, this is early in the process, and we're already seeing fireworks where the judge is shooting off fireworks, the police officers' attorneys are, and the prosecutors are kind of fighting back with saying this is a ludicrous ruling. So it's going to get interesting.
Attorneys for the police officers talking about the idea of a change of venue. What do you think the possibility is that that will happen?
Well, it's a decent chance because appellate courts give trial courts a hard time if they don't really explore the issue of pretrial publicity with the jurors. So there's a chance of that. The problem is this is such a national story. I don't know if there's a whole lot of logic to moving it to Wisconsin as opposed to Minnesota or any other place. I mean, this is a case where the pretrial publicity has been huge, and it'll continue to be huge. So you just have to find jurors that say, you know, I watched it, but I'll basically judge the case on the evidence in court. That's a tough road no matter where you're going to be.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. And Jim, we'll be watching your Twitter feed at Trusty Lawyer. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick.
6:59, we've got 7 o'clock news coming up next with Maria Leaf. Then we're back with John Gizzi. We'll be talking with Cheryl Atkinson, Tony Schaefer, and Katie McFarland.
Get a credit card that gives you what you need now. A low interest rate on everyday purchases and a place to transfer high interest rate balances. The PenFed Gold Contactless Card is our lowest interest rate credit card. You can even earn a $100 statement credit when you spend $1,500 in the first 90 days. Join PenFed and together we can help you keep more of what's yours. Visit PenFed.org/goldcard. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.